great. I was talking to Sue Wilson here just a little, I think it was last night. Near as I can tell, I've been coming here to Lima since 1996. And I've only missed 1 or 2 years, you know, in that period of time. So some of us had an opportunity to build some really great relationships. Of course, I've seen some of you guys are really young turn, you know, have some gray hair along the way. But it's been a real blessing to be able to share and to see, you know, the new creation principles and the gospel of glory to be developed, and, you know, the great teamwork and the increasing teamwork that we have. I'd like to turn to Philippians chapter 1. You know, I tried to look Philippians chapter 2 for adversity, and I saw there that Epaphroditus got sick, and I didn't think I wanted to talk about that. And but boy, I noticed in Philippians chapter 1, there's some interesting adversity stuff there in that Paul talks about here. You know, for example, verse 12, Philippians 1:12, he said, "I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the Praetorian Guard and to everyone else, and that most of the brethren, trusting the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. Some, to be sure, are preaching Christ even from envy and strife, but some also from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. And the former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, rather than from pure motives, thinking to cause me distress in my imprisonment." Okay, well, there's a few little adversities there. Prison. You know, I've been to prison a few times, but I've always been on the right side of the window. You know, having to study. And I've actually been inside the prison in Deer Lodge, Montana. The education director there was a friend of mine, and so I actually got to go in and spend some time there. But, you know, never been a prisoner myself. And, you know, you think of the idea, okay, here's the Apostle Paul. He decides that he wants to go, say, under a little duress from Thessalonica down to Berea. And then it seemed like the next best thing to do is to go from Berea to Athens, and then maybe from Athens to Corinth. Well, he's free to make those movements, but once you're slapped in this jail cell, once you're clapped in irons, you're not making any decisions to go anywhere. See, now, you know, when I try to process that on a personal basis, see, and say, okay, that would be some adversity, right? Try to maintain a positive attitude in the face of that. You know, once Paul got arrested there in Jerusalem, as he finished up the third missionary journey, most of the rest of his life was spent in prison. And the book of Acts, you know, it's going to take, you know, the last fourth of the book, you know, Paul's life in prison would be kind of the title of it. So you often wonder, why would the Scripture allow so much time to be devoted to some guy in prison? Well, there are going to be a lot of brethren down the road going to be in prison, right? There going to be a lot of brethren down the road in prison. So it's nice to have an example of how to handle that type of adversity and maintain a great attitude. It's been already brought out. Here's a guy inside prison writing a letter to the guys outside, encouraging the guys outside. You know, that's not the way it usually works. But he wrote a lot of those prison epistles, and they're some of the most powerful and encouraging books there are. You know, Ephesians, Colossians, I mean, a lot of power, a lot of light in those books. You know, you think about that. So brethren are going to need to spend, you know how to spend time in prison. Spend it profitably. My buddy, Dante Aguinaldo, in the Philippines, somebody didn't like him over there. So he was on his way home from a Bible study here a number of years ago. All of a sudden, two police motorcycles, boom! Okay, hauled him off in prison. Spent a year in prison. supposedly dealing with drugs, okay? But never came to trial. Somehow the charges has just dropped. No idea, okay? He said, though, I was the mayor of the prison. He was preaching in prison. You just don't know how that's all going to play out. But Donnie's a great guy. He really is. Now he's under duress again because somebody planted a baggie of drugs on the outside of his air conditioner. And 11 other bags were planted throughout the region the same night. Now, some radio announcer in the province got on the radio, said, this looks like a plant job. Okay? And the common comment among the people was that radio announcer had a lot of courage to go on the radio and say that. See, that's still hanging over Dante's head. You know, they arrested him. They put him in prison. Doesn't know exactly what the charges are. You know, we helped him get the bail money to get out so that he can be productive. But he's got that hanging over his head. He's got no idea where that's coming from. See, when you have a justice system that breaks down, you know, where results have got to be political rather than based on objective evidence. See, you've got a breakdown of the system, and that can be used. The judicial system, which becomes the so-called judicial system at that point, can be used to target individuals that don't have the correct viewpoints. Well, by definition, we as Christians don't have the correct viewpoints because, number one, we're going to march to a different drum. You know, we hear the beat that causes the cadence of the army of God, you know, that Mike was talking about. That's the beat that we hear. We march to that cadence. And nothing's going to stop us from marching to that cadence. You know, the state says, no, there's a different cadence here. There's a different direction. See, automatically, we become enemies of the state. And so Paul's showing us how to handle that in a positive fashion. See, it's adversity. It's real adversity. But we got to see how you handle that. Look at those letters. Realize those letters are written from prison. And listen to the attitude of the guy in those letters. Adversity. There's other adversity here. Some of the brethren got courage, more courage to speak the word of God without fear. Well, that's interesting because generally, you know, people get discouraged, but there's a positive. But behind that's that negative. Some are preaching Christ even from envy and strife. Seeking to cause me some problems, he said. You know, well, I personally get upset when I detect that somebody may not be preaching the gospel from a pure motive. You know, it bothers me, to be honest, because sometimes you can detect certain things. But look at Paul's handling that adversity. You know, as you have a breakdown of society, Jesus said when lawlessness is increased, most people's love goes cold. Not just a blanket statement. So the more pressure there is, see, the more likely if somebody's preaching the gospel, more likely they're to not have pure motive. You got to understand the confusion factors that show up in there. So that's an adversity that the Apostle Paul faced, but he's still coming through it. Great attitude. He said, I'm just thankful Christ is proclaimed. Just regardless of the person's motive, I'm thankful that the gospel proclaims. See, these are attitude things that help us through adversity. There, you know, Paul says, you know, here in Philippians chapter 1, he says in verse 21, to me, to live is Christ and to die is gain. That's a win-win. To live is Christ, to die is gain. You have that perspective, you have that idea in mind, you're going to maintain the great attitude regardless of adversities. And there's so many things. You know that 2 Corinthians chapter 6 passage? Let's go back and look at that again. I mean, these things really are written for our example, aren't they? Not just the Old Testament stuff, but the New Testament. I mean, these things here, in verse 4 here, he says, in much endurance. See, in afflictions. I was just thinking when he's going over that, in hardships and distresses. Beating. I mean, you talk about adversity. You know, outside of my dad beating me. I mean, I've been ordered out of houses. You know, I had a guy try to choke me one time. He was a Vietnam vet, and he was struggling a little bit. You know, and I was having Bible studies with his mom, and they lived in kind of a basement apartment. And the taxi pulled up to the basement. You know, kind of a daylight, but it slide. Taxi driver pulls up, hands the guy a case of beer, and guy hands the taxi driver the money. And it looked like a routine operation to me, see. And so I was studying with his mom, and he came over and he asked a question. And I gave him the answer. He didn't like the answer. You know, and he immediately tried to choke me. And, you know, thoughts are going through my mind. Let's see, Jesus said if somebody strikes you on the right cheek, you know, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, on the fly, exactly how do I handle this. You know, he was drunk enough that I could pry his hands loose, see? But so I said, okay, well, I'll just leave. But he did kick me in the seat of the pants as I was going out the door. You know, but, you know, I've never been beaten. You know, I've never been beaten for the cause of Christ. Imprisonments, tumults, labors, sleepness, hunger. You know, I mean, these are all adversity. And I was thinking a little bit. Is there an adversity situation that I could see? We don't know the backstories on most of those. You know, the backstory would be really interesting, but we don't know those. You know, just beatings. Okay, great, Paul, thanks. Well, we don't want to get the Bible too thick, so. But I was thinking of a situation that happened in August of 1994. Matt Wilson, Charlie Jacobs, and I had gone to Minsk, Belarus, to kind of help out in, you know, the missionary. Stuart Merrill was going to be gone for a bit, and so we decided to go and take about a month there in Belarus and Russia, do some work in Poland and in Germany, okay? And so our, now you got to realize, you got a real total amateur who's the head guy on this trip. That'd be me. Okay? You know, and Matt and Charlie were late teens, maybe about 20, somewhere in that area. A lot of you guys know Matt and Charlie. And so, you know, we come into Minsk, you know, get through the, you know, I mean, if you go, how many here have ever been into the airport at Minsk? Yeah. Were they kind of a little bit nasty when you went through, Bob, or were they getting a little more customer service relation? Just cold, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, when we were there, you went through there and you had this military guy, you know, and there's a mirror, you know, and, you know, and you'll go through. And, well, part of that trip, we left Belarus. We went through the a border town called Brest. The Treaty of Brest-Litovsk was signed there. It's on the border between Belarus and Poland. And right there, they changed the gauges of the trains. Okay, now, everything Poland west is European gauge. Border Poland east is American gauge. Because Russian industry was built by USA from the early times of Stalin on. Okay. Just need to know that. So they check the trains up and they, you know, take the American gauge out and they put the European gauge in, and away you go. Okay, Well, when you get to that border, you know, you're on the Belarusian side. Boom! That train door opens, you know. Passport! Passport! Okay. Well, you know, I had my contacts in. You know, I was kind of sleepy. It was in the middle of the night. See? And the guy's looking. Not you. Well, see, I made a real mistake when I got my passport picture taken. I smiled. Don't smile for passport pictures because they're not going to recognize you because when somebody look at your passport, you're not smiling, okay? We finally got that sorted out. Got into the Polish side, same thing, treated us pretty roughly. And went on from there to Germany, you know, back to Poland. Got back to the border between Poland and Belarus again, and they booted us off the train. Okay, now, the reason they did, see, I had an amateur in charge of the trip. The amateur only got single entrance visas and not multiple entrance visas going in. Okay, easy mistake to make. Okay, and since we didn't have multiple entrance visas, we're booted. Okay, now we're in trouble, right? Adversity. And so we finally catch an open air, what they call an open air train, all the way from the border to the east edge of Warsaw. And this is a train that goes along and stops about every 15 minutes. The whole car opens up, okay? And then the commuters get on, and then the whole car closes up again. And I could tell by the, the amount of dew on the cabbages out there in the Polish fields, it was about 40 degrees, okay? So it was cold. So poor old Charlie had a towel wrapped around his head. It was cold. See, all the way in, okay? Now we're in trouble. The lady with us, you know, our Russian interpreter, Russian and Belarusian is close enough to Polish that they can communicate back and forth. They have slightly different pronunciations. Like G in Russia, Galina, is Ha in Polish, so it's Halina. So if you ever want to know where the name Galina comes from, just change it to Halina. Ah, you know where that came from, okay? And so that was a help. We had one contact in Poland, in Warsaw. And so we called that number, and the lady answered. And she's a businesswoman, and she was normally going to be gone to the Czech Republic that day, but she decided for some unknown reason just to stay home. See, if she hadn't been there, I don't know. I don't know how the story would have ended. Now, on top, you know, okay, you understand, back in those days, there's no cell phones, right? I mean, 1994 wasn't that long ago, but it's pre-cell phone. Just maybe some cell phones, maybe some early bag phones and stuff are just starting to come out. Not in Eastern Europe, okay? And very rare you could even find a pay phone. And there's no phone books. No phone books whatsoever. Okay, today you just, you know, go to, you know, Google Maps or something and, you know, the Apple map or whatever. And say, okay, I want such and such a business, you know, and, you know, it'll tell you the location and the phone number. And you can even just press the little phone deal and dial for you, right? Couldn't do that. So we had no idea how we're going to find the Belarusian embassy. You got to go to the Belarusian embassy. Fortunately, see, Warsaw is the capital. That's where the embassy is going to be located. It's 3 blocks from the lady's house. She knew exactly where it was. So I went over there and got the situation straightened out, and we're able to eventually get back into Belarus. Okay, now, the reason I'm bringing that up, okay, what can happen to your attitude, okay, when you're running into frustrations like that? Okay, now it's my fault, okay? You know, always select a tour guide that has experience, okay? But, one of the things I've learned over the years, God really works with amateurs. You know, we are his kids. You know, and dad and mom are actually keeping an eye on the six-year-old when the six-year-old isn't conscious that mom and dad are keeping an eye on him. Oh, nice bike. Yeah, okay. Okay. Freedoms, the kid thinks. Well, guess what? Mom and dad are there. Mom and dad put some boundaries, right? Well, that's how dad is with these kids. So you got, amateur tour guide out there. So, all heaven swings into action. Said, okay, the kid's on his first tour here. I think about 12 angels, 12 volunteer angels here. This should be maybe enough. If we have to call in some reinforcements, we'll get them, all right? That's really the kind of care we got, aren't we, as Christians? And so, everything worked. Could have been a total disaster. We could have got lost in the streets of downtown Warsaw, been wiped out by the Polish mafia, and never shown up again. Nobody ever know what happened. See, I mean, that's real. When we were in Minsk one time, we had to go down to the bank. The bank wouldn't let you take money out. You could only put money in. Now, you could pay the government, but outside of that, you couldn't take money out of a bank. Hey, when the banks start making their own rules, okay, so what they would do is they'd keep, because the Belarusian inflation was going up so bad, that what they do is they keep everything in American dollars. And then when they had to go down to the bank, then they'd trade it in for Belarusian rubles and then deposit that and then use that to pay the government, okay? So we're down there about, bank's going to open it at 10, so we're down there before 8. Because that's how a socialist system works. It's long lines and poor service. So we're down there before 8, and just to try to get in line. And we're only about 30 people back, because the line got longer, okay? And so about 9 o'clock, here comes the mafia guy. See, and the mafia guy is working the line. He will trade your American dollars for Belarusian rubles, and he'll give you a better rate than the bank will, and a lot better service. Okay, that's what it's like. The mafia is everywhere. So we could have been downtown Warsaw, and the Polish mafia got us, disappeared. But Dad was helping. See, Dad was helping. The lady could have gone to the Czech Republic. She didn't. She might not have been home when she called, but she was. We called, but she was. She might have not been willing to help us, but she was. Might not have been able to find the Belarusian embassy, but we did. See, the point is when you hit adversities, also you're operating by faith. That's what the Apostle Paul's doing. See, he's, and look at that wasn't. That wasn't any big adversity. It's a great memory. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I certainly remember it. I certainly remember standing in the train station in Brest, that's Brest, and the whole place smelled like urine. You think of a really nice airport terminal or a nice Amtrak terminal in the United States, that whole thing smelled like urine. It was what it's like. But that really wasn't a lot of adversity. But it's a faith tester, isn't it? It's a faith tester. The point being is God is really working with us. 1 John chapter 4, is a very important, there's a verse in there really important to me. First John chapter 4, verse 4. 1 John 4, 4. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them. Because greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. Greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. In you. Greater is he who is in you. Well, who's that? Who really cares for his kids? He does. We're really not on our own. Now, it's by faith. I mean, you know, okay, I don't see God. I don't feel God. I don't hear God. By faith, though, right here. Right here. Working to make our efforts successful. Part of what he does is he puts us where he wants us, when he wants us. Scripture says that he has placed the members of the body, each one of them, just as he desired. God has got a strategic plan that he's working, and he's going to get us where he needs us when he needs us to be there. What we have to be prepared for is to have enough faith to keep taking the next step. No matter what the adversity is, no matter what the obstacle is, no matter what it is, take the next step. If all else fails, take another step forward. If all else fails, take another step forward. You may hit a door. But a lot of times, as soon as you push that door, it opens. So that's the way faith works. It's the way faith works. Paul often talked about open doors, didn't he? You know, if you got an open door, you go through it. Obstacles, see, difficulties. I tried to come to you at Thessalonica more than once. See, but Satan hindered us, right? That's real stuff. Yeah. I was talking to some of the guys earlier, and we're conscious of the fact that there's been a sea change here in the last year. It seems to be a sea change. It's been coming for a long time. But There's three boxes that the public has. Three boxes. They got the soap box, and they got the ballot box, and they got the cartridge box. And there's the only three boxes they got. See, the soap box is where you get up and give your speeches. Okay? You know, today it's social media, internet, whatever form of communication you have. That's your soapbox. And you got the ballot box. Now, what's happening to the soapbox? Being cut off. You know, one of the things we were talking about, and I'm not sure that I'm getting this all right, you know, because all Facebook, and because this is live streamed over Facebook. Right? And you guys are saying, if I'm getting it right, that it looks like we're being shadow blocked? Shadow banned. Looks like these broadcasts are being shadow banned. Because the number of viewers is way, way down. It shouldn't be. See, that means something going on. I think Nathan Cox is having some of the same troubles with. Okay? All right. There's your soapbox, folks. There's your soapbox already. You know, you wouldn't know you were being shadow banned unless you started trying to check some of the statistics, right? In a little old Lima, Ohio, messages being shadow banned already? I just increased it, Marshall. Okay? ballot box. And right out of the chute, I mean, I'm trying to read election results early in the morning the next day. You know, the charges are going to be, that the election fraud was there, that the election was stolen. Instantly, all the media that I had, baseless charges. There's the same word, baseless charges. What? You know, I mean, I don't know if the Clarks still follow Pennsylvania politics. Of course, Pennsylvania, I mean, those guys, the Philly boys, they are honorable down there, man. Philly, the brotherly love town, man. Right? You know, we all know the election was totally monkeyed with. We know it. So what about your ballot box? See, if your soapbox is gone, if your ballot box is gone, what do you got left? Is for the American public, the cartridge box. Now, are they coming for the cartridge box? They are. Just check some of the legislation, like Senate Bill 5 or something. You know, see what they plan to do with the guns or ammunition. Okay, that's where the American public's, yeah, all they got. Soapbox, ballot box, and cartridge box. Now, that's given us some opportunity, though. Because we got one more box. It's called the toolbox. We got the toolbox. But we need to be prepared to use the toolbox in the face of a lot of adversity. Need to be prepared to do those personal Bible studies. You know, see, the one thing that they can't stop is person-to-person communication. People figure out how to do that. We were just talking. How many kids have been in the Christian school? Okay. There's supposed to be no notes passed in the Christian school, right? No notes passed, right? Do notes get passed? Yeah. People figure out ways to communicate, right? They do. And so, see, that's the thing that they cannot stop. See, that's why Jesus' plan is you go, you make disciples, you immerse those disciples, and you continue to teach those disciples. See, we got the toolbox, and we got a really nice set of tools for a learnable, teachable, and duplicatable system whereby the average Christian has got the tools and the techniques that he needs to go to the person next door, to engage in those conversations. You don't know who's being woken up by these events and circumstances. That's our opportunity. That's our opportunity. Some of us may be in jail. Some of us may be under duress or threat or whatever. But that can't stop us. See, that can't stop. Adversity, opposition cannot stop us. We are the mighty resurrected army. There is no human force on the planet that can stop us. Because you know what? Dad's working with us. Dad's working with us. He's going to open the door. He's going to get us to the right spot at the right time. We just have to have enough faith to keep taking one more step forward. If all else fails, take another step forward. If all else fails, take another step forward. If all else fails, take another step forward. God bless you.